You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough. You're listening to Halford and Brough.
Thatcher Demko, he is injured.
This is my nightmare.
Let's go, Casey Chance. Echoing around Rogers Arena. He's got the backing of the fan base. You can tell that as Forsberg gets a long shot. Tip, they score!
It'll come. At least got to breathe. You know, it's not the end of the world.
Would you say it's time for our viewers to crack each other's heads open and feast on the goo inside?
Yes, I would, Ken.
Good morning, Vancouver. 6 o'clock on a Wednesday. Happy Wednesday, everybody. It is Halford. It is Brough. It is Sportsnet 650. We are coming to you live from the Kintec Studios in beautiful Fairview Slopes in Vancouver. Jason, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, dog, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Laddie, good morning to you as well.
Hello, hello.
Halford and Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience a Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer. Today we are in hour one of the program. Hour one is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling, they recycle, you get paid. Visit them at 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver.
We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for?
I know the answer. The answer is Kintec. We have a big, big show ahead. You know, it was a young Ferris Bueller many moons ago that said, life moves pretty fast. And in the span of 24 hours, life here in Canuckland, it moved at a rapid breakneck speed. When we left the show yesterday, things were good. The Canucks were up 1-0 in their first round playoff series against the Preds. Thatcher Demko was still the starting goalie. Tyler Myers was fine and in the lineup. Everything was good. Lots changed overnight.
Life moves pretty fast.
Real fast, Ferris. Real fast. We got a big show.
Yesterday was the Cameron part of Ferris Bueller.
I couldn't even keep up.
Get out of bed.
Yeah. Cameron in the modern version was in bed with his phone, and his phone was just a doom scroll of things.
I'm dying, Ferris. You're not dying.
Yeah, but you know who might be? Tyler Myers? No, he just has the flu. It was a long day. We have so many things to get into. Guest list begins today at 6:30. Jeff Merrick, Hockey Night in Canada, Jeff Merrick Show, 32 Thoughts Podcast is going to join us. Lots to get into with Jeff, obviously. 7:30, former NHL defenseman, now working as a color analyst for Sportsnet 650. Brett Festerling is going to join us. He worked the post-game show last night, and he was asked, as a former player, can you try to explain to us what the heck is going on with Elias Pettersson? I want to ask Brett that exact same question today. At 7:30. 8 o'clock, Robbie Stanley is going to join us from 102.5 The Game, Nashville Sports Radio. I guess he'll be basking in the glow. I don't know how thrilled they are with how it looked aesthetically. I know all Nashville Predators fans and media are ecstatic with the fact that they got their split in Vancouver. Doesn't have to be an oil painting. Doesn't matter what it looks like. The first round series between the Preds and the Canucks is now tied at 1-1. We'll talk to Robbie Stanley about that. At 8 o'clock. We're also giving away a $100 gift card to Primetime Bridge Brewing. Best what we learned. You got to start putting them in now. The Dunbar Lumber text message in basket is already getting filled up. 650, 650 is the number. WWL is the hashtag. Beer is the emoji. Send them in. Best what we learned. $100 gift card to Primetime for a little bit of, to Bridge Brewing for a little bit of Primetime beer. Working in reverse on the guest list, 8 o'clock, Robbie Stanley, 7:30, Brett Festerling, and 6:30, Jeff Merrick. That's what's happening on the program today. Laddie, let's tell everybody what happened.
Hey, did you guys see the game last night?
No. Oh, what happened?
I missed all the action because I was...
We know how busy your life can be.
What happened?
Missed it? You missed that?
What happened?
What Happened is brought to you by the BC Construction Safety Alliance, making safety simpler by giving construction companies the best in tools, resources, and safety training. Visit them online at bccsa.ca. Philip Forsberg and former Canuck Anthony Beauvillier each had a goal and an assist. And the Nashville Predators, as I mentioned, even their first-round series with the Vancouver Canucks, with a 4-1 win at Game 2 at Rogers Arena on Tuesday. But really, Forsberg and Beauvillier weren't the stories. There were so many other stories. Jason, where do we begin?
Well, to sum up last night with one word, I'd have to go with frustration all around. Not only did we spend most of the days trying to digest the news of Thatcher Demko being hurt and wondering if or when he could be back and wondering if Casey DeSmith was up for the job. Then the Canucks went out and played one of, honestly, the most frustrating Canucks games I've ever witnessed. And I know people might be like, the Canucks have played some big games and lost them. And I know the stakes last night weren't as high as, say, Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final or any Game 7, really. The whole thing from start to finish last night could be summed up with that one word, frustration. Let's talk about, I guess we might as well just dive in and start with the three goals that Nashville scored last night. They were all incredibly frustrating to watch. On the first one, with the game, what, barely a minute old, Quinn Hughes falls. Like, he's one of the best skaters in the world, and he gets the puck, and he just catches an edge and falls in the corner, turns it over. The puck obviously goes over to the Preds. Back to the point, and then Casey DeSmith gets caught sliding the wrong way on a tipped point shot.
He went left, puck went right.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm not a goalie expert, but, you know, like, and I realized the puck was tipped, but I don't think you can be sliding like that. Like, he's still sliding today, right? Like, he's just sliding, and, you know, like, he just overcommitted, and that's been an issue with Casey DeSmith that all the goalie experts like Laddie have brought up before. So I mean, that's just one of them. That's just the start. And I mean, it was awful because the crowd was sitting there going, like, they actually had a chant.
We heard it in the intro,
right? Let's go Casey or whatever. Like, and then and Shorty's on the call. He's like, oh, the chant didn't work, right? And it's 1-0 right away. The second one, two Canucks, Juleson and Lindholm, try to contain two Preds in the corner, and I think they both went to the wrong guy, or Juleson left Forsberg all alone. The puck goes to Forsberg, and he's like, oh my God, I'm in front of the net all alone here. And he beat Casey DeSmith with a really nice shot, high, roofed it. But, you know, he should have never been in that position. All of a sudden, he's coming out all alone. Two-on-two battle? You can't let one of those guys get by you all the way to the front of the net. And the third one, I don't know if this one was the worst, but it might have been the nail in the coffin for the Canucks last night. Petey, who we'll talk about, turns it over after he seemed to, I don't know, double clutch on a pass at his own blue line. DeSmith makes the first save, but goes off his shoulder right into the slot. Petey's back checking, and you know, he'd fallen, of course, and he's trying to get back into the play, and he was there. He was back in the play. But he's puck watching and he's not picking up a man, and Colton Sissons scores on the rebound. So it's not only mistakes, but it's mistakes piling up on mistakes. And as Tocchet likes to say, you can make one mistake and make up for it, but you can't make two or three in a row and get away with it. So that's only one of the frustrating elements of last night.
A facet of frustration.
Just a facet, because, you know, if you didn't watch the game, you might sit there and be like, wow, the Canucks must have been awful. It sounds like Nashville dominated them. No. Like, that was far from the case. And although UC Saros was good, don't get me wrong, especially the stop he made on Suter in the first where he's able to get his right pad on the puck, that was an incredible save. But the Canucks let this guy off the hook so many times. Possession-wise, they dominated this game. I'm thinking about the time in the first when Petey chose to pass to Garland instead of shooting it.
Right into his shin pads.
Only problem was his pass was a foot off the ice. Or at the end of the first when Petey had a wide open net and hooked it wide. And it wasn't just Petey. It was a lot of Petey, but it wasn't just him. The Canucks hit the post a couple of times too, including Joshua in the third from in close with an open net. And then there were all the other missed shots. I'm just looking at the box score right now. Missed shots. 33.
That's a new playoff record for the team.
Congratulations.
Surpassing their high of their 25 in the triple overtime game against Dallas. Remember that one? We did a high 10 that night. It wasn't because they missed the 31 shots.
I mean, how many periods did that go, right? You know, like.
Yeah.
This was just three periods. And then the Preds blocked 30 shots last night. So the Canucks had 6,000 attempts and 18 on net.
84 shot attempts, all told. The new team playoff record, surpassing a total that they had in 2011 against the San Jose Sharks.
So all told, you're sitting there going, you know, you're watching the game, and you're like, the Canucks are the better team here. But a lot of this was by design for Nashville, and you have to credit the Preds for the way they frustrated the Canucks shooters. They have gotten in passing lanes, and then more importantly, they have gotten in shooting lanes. You know, I know we're going to talk a lot about Petey today, and some people will be frustrated and text in things like, he's not trying hard enough, or his effort isn't there. He's invisible. Don't say he was invisible last night, because to me that you were not watching the game. Petey was far from invisible, and I get it. There have been games where he's not been involved enough. He hasn't had the puck on his stick, and that's frustrating. This was not one of those games where Petey was invisible. He was physically engaged right from the start. He went out there throwing the body, had the puck on his stick a ton, especially in the first. It just seemed like every decision he made with the puck was the wrong one. Mm-hmm. A few times he passed when he should have shot. But it's not like he refused to shoot. I don't want to see anyone texting in saying, the guy's got to shoot. 7 of his shots were blocked last night. 7. Mm-hmm. You know, and then there was this giveaway that led to the Preds' third goal, coupled with his failure to tie up Sissons on the back check. You know, I've been convinced all along that Petey's biggest issue is between his ears. It's not
an empty net goal. I mean, or no goal.
It's
the
not
a miss.
It's not a wrist injury or any sort of physical injury. He might be a little nicked up, but so are probably a bunch of players. It's not his line mates, although his line mates could be better. He's got some pretty good line mates on the power play, and his issues are still there on the power play. He has just got no confidence with the puck. He's not being decisive with his decisions. He looks like he's got the yips, double clutching, taking forever to get his shots off. And here's the thing. Here's the thing. We've seen this before from Petey. We've seen exactly this. I feel like I'm taking crazy pills sometimes when I hear people's analysis of Petey's play. This is exactly what happened a couple of years ago when he hit rock bottom in Carolina. Mm-hmm. And he came out of that eventually. And he said, I've learned a bunch of things, you know, and he talked about, you know, I remember an interview he did with Drancer for The Athletic, and I was reading it last night, and he goes, everyone likes the attention when you play well, but I've just learned or not learned, but I've realized that the more I think about what other people think, the more I look at social media, and he trailed off in his conversation, Drance says, and he said, when I got here, everything was so big compared to what I was used to back home. Now I'm not focusing on it too much. I know if I play well and if I help this team win, that's all that matters. It's great when people say good things about you, but it doesn't really matter compared to the guys in the locker room. So this was all between the ears. This was all a confidence issue. And I think maybe it might not be the exact same thing, but I think it's all between the ears with Petey right now. He is in a spiral of sorts. And it's coming at the wrong time.
Let's hear more now on Elias Pettersson from his head coach. This is Rick Tocchet speaking at length about number 40 following a 4-1 loss to the Nashville Predators in Game 2 of their opening round series on Tuesday night.
Well, I think, P, like the team, I think there's times we're not decisive. Like there's, when you got that puck and you beat pressure, it's downhill and it's everybody and it's shot on net, people in net. And for whatever reason, you know, and we had some of those, but then we deferred, tried to throw a cross ice pass, or you know, in reference to Petey, he's a young kid. You know, this is his first kind of taste of pressure playoff thing, and you know, this is good for him. He's got to learn that, you know, he's got to dust himself off and be ready for Game 3. And he's got to be very decisive with the puck. I want to see him shoot the puck. Like, he's got to take it. Like, and I think he'll be fine. I mean, this is good for him. Good learning lesson.
Good learning lesson. So there's a lot to unpack there.
Feel good for him. It doesn't feel like this is all good for him. Maybe he's going to learn something from it.
Target's got nothing else to say at this point.
Yeah.
Nothing else to say. There's nothing good that can come from trying to hyperanalyze. He did offer some suggestions to the young man. Like, one of them was like, you just need to take it. You just need to shoot more.
Don't miss three empty nets.
But here's the thing.
I think the best word that Tocchet used was, and this goes for all the Canucks, like, they weren't being decisive with their decisions. You could feel them trying to think their way through what the Preds are doing. What the Preds are doing is just fronting the puck, right? You're going to hear that. Be prepared for this phrase to hear a lot. You're probably going to hear Drantz talking about it a lot, too, if you haven't already heard about it. So, basically, when you're defending in hockey, you almost got two options. You can front the puck, which is kind of trying to it's getting in front of the puck, whether it's shooting lanes or passing lanes. Or you can do, like, the box-out method, which is, right, like, you let your goalie see the shots in some cases, and then you just box guys out, and you make sure that, first of all, your goalie that sees the puck, but also that you take a man, right? Mm-hmm. So if there's a rebound, that guy isn't going to get it. So how you beat a fronting team is you need to find passing lanes and shooting lanes. And that's puck movement, and that's being decisive, that's being quick. If you've got an open shooting lane, shoot the puck. And then oftentimes what's going to happen is, because the Preds are fronting it, or the other team is fronting it, they're not boxing out. So oftentimes you're going to get a guy all alone in front of the net. Right? So, like, Dakota Joshua nearly, like, when he hit the post in the third period, like, that was an example of the type of goals that they can score, because he's wide open in front of the net. There's a loose puck there. He should have scored there, but, he was being checked a little bit, and he just couldn't sweep the puck into the net.
So the problem that I had with that analysis, when I heard Tocchet said it and then hearing you explain it too, is when you talk about the reluctance to shoot and the indecisiveness, I said, but they had 84 shot attempts. If anything, they knew exactly what they wanted to do with the puck, and there wasn't really any...
Taking too much time, though. Like, okay. if you see the PD shots that he took, it's oftentimes he has the puck and he's trying by himself almost to create a shooting lane.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, and the times he didn't shoot the puck, like the time he tried to fire that pass to Garland, he had a shooting lane open. And it's just, he's taking too much time with the puck. And, and that is that's a confidence issue, right? Like, you don't feel right. It's almost like he feels like he needs to feel the puck first before he shoots it, instead of just getting it and ripping it.
From one coach to another, we go back now to Rick Tocchet, speaking about the reluctant nature of his team and how his team can't be reluctant in these moments. Tocchet, following last night's loss, here we go.
Yeah, because we didn't get the puck to the net. Like, we were, I felt it halfway through the game. Actually, Dakota and Garza started to do it, which they yet never do, is, they're trying to make plays in the middle. When if we go north, that's when you get teams in trouble. We're reluctant. I don't know if they thought it was going to be easy because we had all this possession time. Not those two guys, I'm saying the team in general. But, it was low. What is it, four shots each after the first period? It wasn't much, right? I thought we were reluctant to shoot the puck the first period. Really reluctant, and it's something that you got to have. Footy said after the game, it's a learning lesson for these guys. You got to take what's there. Don't force something that's not there.
And there was a lot of forcing of the puck, and it wasn't just Petey, because I don't think it's fair to just pick on him, although he was a big part of it. JT Miller was throwing the puck away like he does sometimes when he gets frustrated. There were some bad passes on the power play. There's some just bad passes overall. Here's the frustrating thing about last night.
All of it.
Because they should have won the game with how they looked out there and all the possession that they have. And you look at the mistakes they made on the goals against. I mean, those are avoidable mistakes. Just starting with the first goal. I mean, Quinn Hughes falling and... Mm-hmm. Casey DeSmith overcommitting, so when I say they should have won the game, I mean, they shouldn't have, because they did make those mistakes. But, you watch this game and you're thinking the Canucks are a better team than Nashville, right? Like overall. So I still, you know, if I'm picking this series, I'm still picking the Preds to win, the Canucks to win this series, even with Casey DeSmith in net. But they're going to have to find a way to create goals. And Tocchet said, listen, there's a plan in place that I don't really want to talk about. Like, we do have a plan to beat the Preds' defensive style, but we've just got to execute it.
Yeah. Well, honestly, I think you saw most of it last night. I think that there was something stylistically that
I don't think you did if you asked Rick Tocchet.
I think his biggest issue is with the execution. I think that the plan was in place. I think that they did enough possession. Possession accumulation, that's not the right phrasing, but they possessed the puck enough and they generated enough opportunities that they should have had more than one goal on the board. I mean,
Oh, of course.
Well, the shots they got a net also, Saros was terrific.
Can focus on the missed shots and the block shots, but there was also three or four not good, glorious chances.
Yes.
Suter, Joshua, take your pick, that should have been in the back of the net.
Pettersson.
Mm-hmm. Those three in particular.
Yeah.
Those three go in, and those are... And
Lafferty had a breakaway.
Right, yeah. And Lafferty didn't even get a shot on net.
Yeah, exactly.
Those chances alone, that's a 4-3 hockey game. So, I understand what he's talking about the reluctance to shoot and the execution not being great. They have more than enough. If I'm Nashville right now, I'm probably more... I'm puzzled about what exactly we are in this series.
Yeah.
Right? Because there's no way that they played that style in game two at any time during the regular season. Like, they had nothing going forward. They had a fluky bounce in the first period. They had a great moment of individual skill and a mistake from the Canucks on the Forsberg goal. And then another mistake. So they pounced opportunistically on those two chances, right? And the deflection was just, it was a freak play. And DeSmith was not good. By the way, I disagree with the DeSmith thing. That's a problem for me. And it's not just the puck stopping. He looks like he has zero confidence.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm talking about handling the puck. And I know that they spot shadowed it during the first intermission, where even the most innocuous plays to set up his blue liners with the simplest of passes was like, let's throw it right into his skates.
It was just a horrible way to start.
Bank this off the dasher? Like, it was all over the place, right?
Mm-hmm. And off the name chant, no less. I mean, you couldn't have ridden that up. Like, it was just ridiculous.
And I don't necessarily blame him for
not helping my confidence.
No.
The crowd is chanting my name.
Yeah.
Oh, it's right behind
As soon as that happened, it felt like the first thing, I actually said it out loud to myself watching the game. As soon as that happened, like, oh, it's going to be one of those games.
Maybe distracted.
Everything goes against
him. He's a 32-year-old journeyman goalie that's probably never had his name chanted by 18,000 people before in anticipation of what's probably one of the biggest starts of his career.
Yeah.
Right? So I don't blame him for being nervous and having the yips, but at the same time, and I've said this all year, I consider there to be a canyon-sized gap between the level that Demko can play up to and the level that DeSmith can play up to.
Well, yeah, 100%.
Secondly,
I don't think that's a hot take at all.
It's not. Secondly, this team, and it's baked into the recipe and it's part of the fabric of the team, is having outstanding goaltending. It's part of their identity. I would have said that Demko was 1B behind Hughes for MVP this year, all due respect to JT Miller. That was my assessment on it. And I think that we saw it, not just in terms of wins and losses, but the way the team played in front, how they feel when Demko's in net as opposed to when they feel how Seelovs or DeSmith. For those of you about to text in to the Dunbar Lumber text line, I am not putting that loss last night on DeSmith. These are two separate conversations. I'm using the hand gestures and everything. These are two separate conversations I'm having. You do not blame him for the loss last night. I'm not sure how far they can go with him in that. Do you understand? You guys understand that?
Yeah, yeah.
I think you get that.
Text in your thoughts and comments, 650-650 into the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber, with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street, Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center, or Arbutus in Vancouver. Online at DunbarLumber.com. Very simple question coming in right now. Do we know if Demko is out long? From what we're hearing,
he ain't coming back this series.
He ain't coming back for this series. And, from what I've heard, I'd be surprised if he's back for the next series as well, which is really, and maybe the playoffs, right?
Tocchet said he was week to week yesterday, by the way, in case you want the
this
official.
This is my nightmare.
Yeah.
That was Rick Tocchet. The official designation last night post game. We won't play the clip because it was 5 seconds long. Mm. It's like Demers week to week. too weak.
You know, and you know, I still think the Canucks should get by the Preds. I'm not saying they will. I think they should. And while that's doable against Nashville with DeSmith in net, I'm not sure I like their chances if they advance and meet the Oilers in the next round. Yes, I know DeSmith beat Edmonton very recently, but the Oilers didn't have McDavid for that game. And McDavid, I don't know if you watched game one against the Kings, fairly big part of that team.
Yep.
I find it a little hard to believe that this injury was not at all related to the injury that kept Demko out for weeks down the stretch. I know Tockett says it wasn't the old injury, and that's all I've really got for you guys. That would be extremely unlucky if that were the case.
Did you see the clip of him supposedly when he got injured? He wasn't doing
much. Last
minute
of the game, yeah.
He wasn't doing much.
Sure looked like a re-aggravation or something.
Well, it may not be exactly the same injury, but you know, when you're doing rehab of a knee, sometimes you can focus on one area and then you're compensating and another part of the knee goes. I'd just be surprised if it wasn't somehow related. And remember that the Canucks were very open with the fact that Demko had to work extremely hard in order to be back for the second last game of the season against Calgary. Demko said himself that that was the game they targeted all along. Now, I'm not saying that the Canucks or anyone, the medical staff, were irresponsible in rushing Demko back to play, but they did have to rush him back. I mean, they kind of acknowledged that. They were talking about how hard Demko worked just to get back in time to play a couple of games to get ready for the playoffs. I'm sure he would have been out longer if it was, you know, November or December, but they needed to target a game and they didn't want to going him in cold into the playoffs without any games. So they targeted that Calgary game. They worked really hard to get him back. Mm-hmm. He did look good.
He looked great in his first three games back.
He did.
This is hockey. I don't even have a problem with any of this. Like, you don't think Demko wanted to come back as soon as possible?
Of course he did. Yeah. He's not like, well, we'll just probably take it pretty casually.
And
then,
for those
of
you that,
it's a playoff.
By the way, for those of you throwing out that the Canucks are cursed, like, I appreciate the narrative and everything, but here's the other thing. The Canucks were unbelievably lucky all season when it came to health. They had no major injuries to any of their star players until Demko got hurt with about a month left in the season. Even that didn't really matter, because they had already sewn up a playoff spot. This is what happens. It's unfortunate that it happened in that particular position, because the goalie position is a lot more unique when it comes to, well, next man up. But it happens, and it is, unfortunately, what it is.
You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough.
But the Predators clear it down. Here's Kiefer Sherwood, right wing, with a chance of the empty net. He scores! Kiefer Sherwood fires it into the open goal. And the Predators go up 4-1 with under 2 minutes left in the third. They're going to tie the series at a game apiece.
8:01 on a Wednesday. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Brough in the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour three of the program. Robbie Stanley from 102.5 The Game in Nashville is going to join us in just a few minutes here. Nashville Sports Talk Radio on the heels of Nashville's 4-1 win over the Vancouver Canucks. They get the split going back to Nashville on Friday for game three. Hour three of this program is brought to you by Campbell & Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell & Pound. Visit them on the internet at campbell-pound.com today.
We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for?
Kintec is the answer.
Yes. So tonight in NHL action, we got the Bruins and the Leafs. Will William Nylander play tonight?
Will Austin Matthews play tonight?
Yeah, he missed the optional this morning. I think both guys are probably going
to
play, but
I'm not willing to rule in or out anybody with the Leafs at this point. William Nylander, I don't even know what's going on with Nylander.
What about Mitch Marner, the invisible man?
I feel like he will be visible tonight.
Okay. Wouldn't being an invisible man be good, though, in terms of sports? Like, nobody would be able to hit you. You'd be invisible out there.
You can still see all your equipment.
And all they'd be seeing is a stick and a puck moving down the ice. It'd be, like, I think you would have the advantage as the invisible man.
It's a very good point, Andy.
So, I mean, I take offense to that.
Take offense
as
to
a
it being
former
a negative
invisible man myself.
You take offense to it being a negative connotation.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what Steve Simmons was doing.
Exactly.
Look how stealthy this guy is.
Yeah, everyone's like, oh, everyone just read the headline. Like, this is classic internet.
Take
you know,
it out of context.
You gotta read the article. This guy's brilliant.
Have
he
you
can
not
turn
seen
invisible.
The movie? Yeah.
You can't TLDR this one. You gotta read.
Vegas is in Dallas for game two. The Vegas Golden Knights have a 1-0 lead in that series. Obviously, the Bruins and the Leafs are tied at 1. And then the Edmonton Oilers host game two against the LA Kings. The Oilers absolutely dominated the Kings in game one.
Yep.
But, you know, as we've seen with the Leafs series and, well, the Canucks series, no matter how well game one goes, you know, the road team can still go in there and get the split. There's also the NFL draft coming up tomorrow.
Yeah.
If anyone's forgotten about that or doesn't care about that,
we're still going
to talk about a little bit about it tomorrow and what the Seahawks might do.
Well, look, we've got a couple nights off between games.
How the quarterbacks might go. It looks like Caleb Williams is going to the Bears, right?
He's minus 2,000 at sportsbooks.
Right.
So yeah, pretty safe.
Pretty safe bet.
Yeah.
Now that they traded their other quarterback, too. You know what? That was a bit of a tell.
Yeah. You know, we follow sports for a living. We kind of can see behind the scenes. We know what's going on here. So it's like Jaden Daniels, Blake, everyone. I think there's going to be about, I don't know, 4 or 5 quarterbacks going in the first round, which will be
Well, let's go to the home of Will Levis now.
Yeah, right. We go to Nashville now. Very happy to get him back.
Titans are going to take an offensive tackle, probably.
I was going to say, I was scrolling Robbie Stanley, our next guest, timeline of 102.5 The Game in Nashville. And it's funny because you talk about different markets and what's going on around the NHL right now. Robbie joins us now on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. First, good morning, Robbie. Thanks for doing this.
Good morning, fellas. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, no problem. So talk about the landscape in Nashville right now, because it's hard to ignore that a lot of people are focused on the Tennessee Titans, who have the 7th overall pick at tomorrow night's NFL draft. And understandably, because, I mean, there's movies dedicated to the NFL draft. It is a big deal. How's the conversation going for you guys at 102.5 The Game this morning?
Yeah, there's obviously a ton of interest in the draft, and with the win last night for the Predators, there's a ton of interest in the playoff series too. So we do a 3-hour morning show. We did about 2 hours on the Predators this morning, 1 hour on the draft, and that's kind of the breakdown of how things went this morning. But people, it's interesting too, because, you know, the Predators get the win last night. People are very excited, obviously, that they evened up the series. But when the shot attempts are 84-36, I think a little bit of nervousness about what that could mean moving forward here. So some nervous excitement from Predators fans this morning.
Yeah, is that a sustainable way to win this series for the Nashville Predators? You know, don't get me wrong, they were excellent in blocking shots and blocking passing lanes. And Andrew Brunette said after the game, we were committed to the pain. And, you know, so you got to credit the Preds for sacrificing their bodies, but do you guys feel like this is a sustainable way for the Preds to win this series, or do they need to get a little more puck possession?
It's not sustainable, at least in my opinion. Like, you got to find a way to get the puck a little bit more. You certainly have to find a way to generate more 5-on-5 than they've been able to in the first two games. And look, I think they deserve a lot of credit for clogging up the shooting lanes, for getting in the middle there and blocking shots and being willing to pay that price. But bottom line is, when Vancouver has the puck as much as they have in the first two games, and particularly as much as they did last night, generally speaking, that's probably not going to end well for you. So I think the Predators know that if they're gonna pull this thing off and they're gonna win the series, they're gonna have to have more time with the puck, have to have more chances offensively, and, you know, coming back home when you're in more control of the matchups and you got last change, how much is that going to help them? I guess we'll have to wait and see. But I mean, it was like a I mean, you guys know this. It was like a glorified penalty kill the entire third period for the Preds last night.
So the thing that kind of caught me off guard was, I guess it's almost like that Shaq meme. It's like, I wasn't familiar with your game, because I kind of saw the Predators being this team that like to get the puck up quick in transition, and they like to play a certain style. And then they came out yesterday, and I was like, this looks like the Kings in the 1-3-1 almost. Like, this is a real commitment to the defensive side of things. Is this just because I wasn't familiar with how the Preds play. Was this always in their arsenal? I can't imagine you've ever had a regular season game where they block like 800 shots, but it was certainly not just on display, but they did a very good job of it as well.
They did a very good job, and I think they're certainly capable. I mean, when they went on their 18-game point streak, they were committed defensively, and the numbers said that they were the best defensive team in the league during that stretch. Now, having said that, they have not played this way all year long. Like, they have been a team that likes to push the pace. They like to get going in transition. That's what Andrew Brunette's game is about. I have not seen them all year long get put in a situation like they were last night.
Right.
Like, Vancouver was all over them, and it was just such a kind of a weird outlier game that way. So, really, the series has gone, I think, a little bit differently than I thought it was going to this point, just based on the way that they play. They've been defending a lot through the first two games, and that's not really been the case for them most of the season.
The series has gone way differently than I thought it was going to go. Because,
yeah.
And none of it really makes sense, because you would say that the Canucks have dominated, obviously, statistically in terms of possession and shot volume and shot metrics, but they've also barely led. Like, the Preds have led almost, you know, two-thirds of this series, and there's score effects that come into that. But it just, you look at the numbers and you're like, none of this really makes sense. What have you thought, like, now that they're coming home with the split? Everyone's got to be happy with the split, but it has to kind of be with a caveat, does it not?
Yeah, for sure. And I think everybody knows that if they're going to win this series, they have to find a way to get going more offensively. I thought it was a good sign for the Preds last night that Philip Forsberg got going in the second period, because quite frankly, it's like through the first four periods of the series, I thought Forsberg was bad as he's been all year. And then he gets going and gets that nice goal to get him on the board last night. They need more of that, but it's been a really strange series. Like, even last, like the thought process of Vancouver having over 80 attempts and only what they end up with, like 18 shots on goal. Like, it wasn't very much that they ended up with. Like, it's been just such a strange series from that standpoint. And look, let's be honest here too. Like, the Predators did get a couple of good bounces to go their way last night. Like, a couple of them went off the post. Pettersson missed a wide open net that I still, for the life of me, can't believe that he missed early in the game too. So there was some good fortune that went their way for the Predators last night, but there's no question about it. Like, if they're going to win the series, they have to find a way to spend more time in the offensive zone and stop just basically being camped out in the D zone.
So who needs to up their game a little bit more for the Nashville Predators, or is it a team-wide thing?
Well, I think the easy answer is a team-wide thing, but I think some guys specifically, Gus Nyquist has been very quiet through the first two games. I think they need more from him. And Tommy Novak. Tommy Novak down the middle has been very disappointing, in my opinion, so far in this series. And look, Novak has always been a guy that's a little bit of a liability in his own end, but you live with that because of the plays he can make in the offensive end. And he's just losing the puck too much. I mean, you watch him play, and sometimes it's forced, sometimes it's not. I mean, he's had a couple of opportunities that have just kind of slid right off his stick so far in this series, and they can't have that with how limited their chances have been offensively. So if I had to identify one guy in particular, they need more from Novak. They need him to be more of a threat offensively. You know, I thought Luke Evangelista on that line played pretty well in game one, and Novak was kind of holding them back. I thought that whole line took a step back last night, and they switched some things around. They put Bevilier up with Sissons and Zucker and moved Mark Jankowski down there with Evangelista and Novak. But that line in particular, when you start to look at matchups and the way Andrew Brunette wants to deploy those guys, I think you're going to see a lot of Novak in the offensive zone with last change. And he's got to find a way to be more impactful than he has been, because he has been a detriment to them so far in this series.
How much do you think being back at home will help the Preds in terms of the crowd? A lot of people, you know, we're not tooting our own horn here, but there was a lot of people around the league that were taking notice of the Vancouver crowd, which, you know, certainly the Canucks were talking about, but I also wonder what effect it had on the Nashville Predators. Maybe they felt like they were in such a hostile environment that they almost went into like a siege mentality, like that, you know, something was coming, and maybe that'll change once they go back to Nashville.
Yeah, I'm interested to see it. First off, I thought the environment in Vancouver was awesome. And, you know, obviously I wasn't there. I was watching through the TV. But, you know, I remember watching this series back in 2011, and I thought the Where the Streets Have No Name U2 stuff was just so cool back then. And the fact that they brought it back was just awesome, and I loved seeing it. And I think the Predators are hoping that the environment in Nashville can kind of be that driving force for them. And look, you know, I've been to a ton of playoff games in Nashville. It's an awesome environment. It's really loud. The fans are really raucous. And quite frankly, like, I think it's going to help them that the game is on a Friday night and then on a Sunday afternoon. You guys know this, but there's a lot of extracurricular things to do outside of that arena on Broadway in Nashville, and I imagine the crowd is going to be fired up by the time that game rolls around. So I think the Predators are hoping that there's a ton of energy in the building. I think there will be. I think it's going to be the best environment in that building in a long time. And I think people are really looking forward to it. And the Predators are hoping that translates to more offensive zone time. Because if it doesn't, I still think Vancouver's chances in this series are pretty good.
We're speaking to Robbie Stanley from 102.5 The Game in Nashville, also the Preds correspondent for NHL.com. Hey, Robbie, what was the reaction in Nashville when you guys heard that Thatcher Demko was going to likely be out for the series?
I got to be honest with you, there was a lot of excitement about that. Yeah. And, you know, I don't think anybody around here obviously wishes that anybody gets hurt. But clearly, I mean, the Predators experienced this a couple of years ago when UC Saros got hurt late in the regular season and wasn't available in that 2022 series against Colorado. Now, Colorado was an absolute buzzsaw that year, so it probably wouldn't have mattered anyway. But certainly, like, when you lose Saros, that's a huge deal. And obviously, Demko is an elite goaltender. So when the Predators found that news, and certainly when their fans found out that news yesterday, I do think it gives you a little bit of life in terms of, all right, well, if you could get to Casey DeSmith, you've certainly got a better chance of scoring on him than you do Demko. And look, you know, the game last night, it was such a dominant performance by Vancouver in terms of puck possession that it's not going to be really the storyline. But I do think if you're the Predators, one takeaway I've got from that game is put as many pucks on net as you can at DeSmith and see what happens. Like, he gave up a pretty fat rebound on that third goal there by Sissons, and I think that's going to be the plan anyway. We'll see if they can execute it, but try to put as many pucks on possible and see how DeSmith handles that pressure in a raucous environment.
We talked about this earlier. After that first goal went in for the Preds and the way that it went in and the circumstances, I was shocked that they weren't firing everything they could on net for the next 5 minutes. I was like, if it was me, I would have been like, shoot from center. Like, let's just try.
Well, they got to get the puck first.
Well, they had the puck. I was like, no, less passing.
They were immediately on the PK almost after that for like 4 minutes.
Because I inherently wanted the Canucks to win, but I'm yelling at the TV. I'm like, Predators, pass less, shoot more. Were you doing the same?
Yeah, for sure. Like, I thought they had a couple opportunities. Like you said, they went on the penalty kill shortly after that, but there was a rush they had with Bovillier, and he tried a saucer pass to the middle of the ice, and I was like, just shoot the puck, man. Ryan O'Reilly missed a chance from the slot on the power play where I was like, just get that puck on the net and see what happens there. And look, you know, it's not like Casey DeSmith is the world's worst goaltender. I mean, we know that, but just I think getting the puck on net and trying to get some of those greasy goals, that's going to have to be how the Predators get their offense in this series. Yes, they've got Philip Forsberg, and I think last night the goal he scored, a good reminder of what he can do when you give him time and space. But I think they certainly passed up too many shot attempts to try to make that perfect pass last night, and that cannot happen for them moving forward.
Real quick, before we let you go, what are the Titans going to do at 7 tomorrow?
I think you're going to see Joe Alt from Notre Dame, left tackle. I hope they get exciting with it and take Malik Nabers if he's there, wide receiver out of LSU. But I think it's going to be a pretty boring pick, and they'll go with the left tackle on Joe Alt, who I think is a good player, but nobody gets excited about offensive line being picked.
Are the fans pretty excited about Will Levis and his potential?
They are. I think more so than the national media and the people kind of looking from the outside in. He came in last year and had a couple of really big games and really big moments, and he's got an absolute cannon of an arm. So I think people are excited to see now that they've got another year of DeAndre Hopkins. They signed Calvin Ridley in the offseason to go with him. So more weapons for him at his disposal this year. I think they're excited to see what he can do.
So we got game 3 on Friday night, game 4 Sunday afternoon. Robbie, with that, we'll let you go. Thank you very much for doing this. We'll check back next week. Who knows what's going to happen by then, but I can guarantee you this, it'll probably be really interesting and exciting.
Absolutely. Thanks, boys, for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it, too. That's Robbie Stanley from 102.5 The Game in Nashville and Preds correspondent for NHL.com.
So a couple of short updates here. William Nylander of the Toronto Maple Leafs did stay out late at the Leafs morning skate with projected scratch Noah Gregor.
What is going on?
So Nick Robertson might be in for Nylander again. Such a curious situation with Nylander because he's out there skating and, you know, everyone's watching him skate and going, well, looks pretty good to me. But it looks like, unless Sheldon Keefe is playing some mind games here, it looks like Nylander is going to miss tonight's game three against the Boston Bruins as well. And this also just in, it's being reported that Florida Panthers center Sam Bennett will be out for a lengthy period of time. Did he leave the game last night?
He got hit in the hand with a puck
after
being in on both of the first two Florida goals. Like, he was a going concern.
Is he a big loss?
Sorry?
Is that a big loss for them?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, of course.
18-year-old Sam Bennett, right?
Yeah, he's been, I know. Yeah, yeah.
No.
I mean, he's their 2C, right? Yeah.
He's kind of the straw that stirs the drink there at times, though. Mm. Like.
Well, him and Tkachuk have been a problem for Tampa Bay through the first two series, as you would expect. But he's one of those guys, like, there's a handful of guys where you can actually say he's more useful in the playoffs than the regular season. Bennett has always kind of been one of them, right? And, I don't want to speculate. We already played armchair psychologist, so why not play armchair doctor? I mean, I'm assuming he broke his hand if he took a puck off the hand, left, and didn't return. But
yeah, now he's going to be out for a while.
Yeah,
apparently.
So there you have it. So yeah, injury news all over the place. Not surprising through the first three or four games of the playoffs.
Sheldon Keefe apparently saying there's a chance Nylander plays tonight. And says will depend on how he responds to extra work.
So you're saying there's a chance.
This morning, that's per Chris Johnston. Austin Matthews is good to go tonight, according to Sheldon Keefe. He just missed the optional skate. Or the morning skate. I think he just took the option on that. And he was brilliant in game two for the Leafs. I'm actually looking forward to watching game three tonight between the Leafs and the Bruins. I think it should be a good hockey game.
Speaking of watching sports on the TV, I got to ask you, how much NBA playoffs have you watched?
None.
Okay.
I'm all in on hockey.
I'm trying my best. I forget sometimes the last week in April and the first week in May, just it's so hectic. Mm-hmm. There are at any time 6 playoff games on every night on average between the NBA and NHL playoffs. I'm trying to consume as much as I can. I was duo watching the Canucks and Preds and the Clippers and Mavs yesterday, because my kid's a huge Clippers fan. Mm-hmm. We took him to one game, and now he's a diehard
Clippers,
Clippers fan.
Yeah, that's a good decision.
Living and dying with the Clips. So I'm watching these games, and he's asking me all these questions about all these other series, and I'm like, you're killing me right now. Like, I know some of the storylines. I'm like, Giannis is out, and Dame played really well in game one, but then Pascal had a big game last night, and I'm trying to get caught up in everything. It's a lot. Mm-hmm. It is a lot that's going on right now. Thankfully, tonight is actually, and it's hilarious because there's 5 games, but it's a quiet night. There's 3 Stanley Cup playoff games, and there's only 2 NBA playoff games. So it's actually a fairly mellow night.
What are the NBA games?
Miami-Boston, which Boston's up 1-0 in that series. No Jimmy Buckets for Miami, so I don't give them much of a shot. There was a big controversy in that series, by the way. So Brian Scalabrine, remember him?
Yeah.
He now works as an analyst. I think it's for NBC Boston. And he accused Heat head coach Eric Spoelstra of telling, I want to say it was Caleb Martin, to intentionally do a hard foul on Jason Tatum at the end of the blowout in game one.
Right. Yeah,
he said he called a code red.
Mm-hmm.
And code red, I guess, is code for you're going to go annihilate that guy with a hard foul.
It's kind of like running the goalie in a blowout.
A little bit. But if the coach was like, go run him. Like not making it very subtle, making it very obvious. So there was a lot of pushback from a lot of different
people.
Like
Sean Payton is coaching.
Wasn't it Greg Williams?
It was Sean Payton that was.
Greg Williams had the bounty system. Though.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Sean Payton was the guy that oversaw it. He's like, I like this bounty system. But so anyway, that's the.
Did you know they made like a lame kids movie about the Sean Payton story?
Yeah. Kevin James was Sean Payton.
Yeah. So the kids were watching it.
I did not watch
it. Because it was one of those, like, I thought it was just one of those, like, harmless, you know, sports stories about kids. And then all of a sudden I'm watching this and I'm going like, wait a minute, is this the Sean Payton story with Kevin James starring as Sean Payton?
Yeah, the movie.
What the heck?
The movie is called Home Team.
Yeah.
It also has one of the vampires from the Twilight series in it. What's his name? Remember when those guys were really popular? Taylor and who was the other guy?
Robert Pattinson.
Yeah, Robert Pattinson, Taylor Lautner. Taylor Lautner's in this movie.
Oh, okay.
So his career is going places.
Yeah.
yeah. No, this was a...
But I was kind of like, is this a comedy or is this like a real serious story? And it was like, it's a bit of both.
It is a very weird movie because it's it's forged in truth,
mm-hmm.
and it's the Sean Payton story.
But it's like Kevin James stars as the, you know, like it's not Kevin James like, I finally wanted to take a serious role, right?
No,
like,
no,
it's
no,
not
no.
like that.
It's
or
a happy-go-lucky
right?
kind of movie. It's yeah, yeah. Adam Sandler produced it. Shockingly, Adam Sandler and Kevin James got together mm-hmm. on something. Anyway.
Kevin James was at the Canucks game, game one.
Damn.
He got like a massive ovation.
People love Kevin James.
He was into it. Yeah.
By the way, I know everyone's like, I can't believe Halford didn't watch this sports movie. This is a bridge too far for me. Even I can't do Home Team starring Kevin James. And Rob Schneider's in the movie, too, speaking of careers that are going places. So there you have it. Okay. I guess that was kind of a what we learned. You can mook out it.
You're listening to the best of Halford and Brough.